Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Okay, this is totally a spoiler alert that you're going to hear within the podcast conversation. So I'm going to allow us to talk about it. But I just want to mention really quickly that I'm so dang excited because Dr. Connolly and I came together, chiropractor and PT, bringing together our expertise to go over a movement longevity program. This is truly like the ultimate movement prescription to age powerfully because we are hitting four major pillars in the body every single week. We're going through mobility, we're going through stability, we're going through balance, we're going through power. And within each of these modules, within each of these weeks, we're hitting on the foot and ankle, the hips, the core, and then we're challenging the system as a whole. And the best part is each day only takes 15 minutes. That's it. And it can be modified from anyone, you know, up to your mother down to an incredible elite athlete. I mean, the exercises that we hit, bringing a chiropractor and a PT together is absolutely incredible. Her and I were both struggling through these ourselves because they're different. They're hitting on something that's going to neurologically create a shift and create stimulus and change within the body so that we can age more powerfully long term. This is what we're going for. We're going for that mobility, that strength where we want to maintain our balance. We want to move powerfully because a lot of these things we lose as we age and it's never too late to get started. So I'm so dang excited to have the opportunity to collaborate with Dr. Connolly, to learn something different myself, and to be able to bring it to you. And the best part is you get the early bird discount, even though we don't have that available anymore. But if you use code OPTIMAL at checkout, and we're going to have this linked up for you, but it's gatehappens.com/movementrx, because it is truly our prescription for movement from a PT in Cairo to keep you moving long term. Again, that is code OPTIMAL that you're going to want to use. That's going to get you our early bird discount, which we don't even have available anymore. Each week throughout the course, Dr. Connolly and I are doing a presentation to go through those different pillars each week and to answer your questions. Any question that even is submitted will get answered. So you don't even have to be there live if you're going to miss it. Now, this is your opportunity to really dive in, to ask us questions, to learn about your body in a whole new way, and the best part, to have this for life. However, the last opportunity to get this is in August of 2025. We're going to close the access to the course, so we are only going through it with a group of people who are really committed to learning. So this is your opportunity to get in now with us. Use code OPTIMAL, and we'll start moving together in August. I am incredibly excited to welcome Dr. Courtney Connolly and Dr. Jen Perez, both doctors of chiropractic, to our show. And if you stick around, there's something very, very, very special at the end that me, a PT, and them, chiros, might have collaborated on. And I'm honestly so excited about it. But we talk about so much more in terms of foot health, shoe wear, understanding orthotics, and so much more in this episode. Now, Dr. Courtney Connolly is the founder of Gate Happens, where she pursues her passion for helping as many people as possible reclaim their foot function. And as an internationally renowned foot specialist and gait specialist, Dr. Connolly teaches both nationally and internationally. She's a chiropractic physician with a BA in kinesiology and a BA in human biology and a doctorate in chiropractic medicine. She's based in Lakewood, Colorado, where she owns and operates Total Health Solutions Clinic and Total Health Performance Gym, where she leads patient care focused in restoring gait mechanics and resolving foot problems to help people move more easily and pain-free. She's also a founding member of the Healthy Foot Alliance, an international team of practitioners dedicated to promoting the benefits of natural footwear, preventing unnecessary surgeries, and improving foot function to create a stable foundation from the ground up. Now, Dr. Jen Perez is a co-founder and COO of Gait Happens and a global leader in lower extremity education. As a chiropractor and gait specialist, Dr. Perez is passionate about educating both individuals and professionals on the importance of lower extremity biomechanics in obtaining meaningful results for patients. She holds a doctorate in chiropractic and a bachelor's science degree in kinesiology with a concentration in sports medicine. She's based in Lafayette, Colorado, where Dr. Perez also owns and operates Kinetic Chiropractic, where she offers personalized care and treatment to help patients restore optimal movement and alleviate pain. Through her online and in-person work, she's been able to help clients worldwide with a focus on foot health and corrective exercise. These two together are some of my favorite humans to learn from. I have been following Gait Happens on Instagram for so long, and I'm so excited for you to learn so much more from them in this podcast. Perez and Connolly, I'm so glad to have you guys here. I have personally admired you guys from afar for so long, so being able to do something together that we're going to talk about later has been so exciting to actually like come together and in person and share expertise. And then to have you guys here to listen to your expertise and get our audience to understand, I'm just so excited.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the feeling is mutual. I think I was introduced to your work like years ago. And yes, it's you've made a great impact on people and movement. And it's just been awesome to see that happen.
And you make it fun. I think that's so important too, is like you make movement fun. We still have on our list to replicate some of your guys' acro yoga videos.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I would love to see that. That would be so fun.
You know I'm going to bring that one to the table, right?
Yes, yeah. Please do though. Please do.
And this is just so fun, being able to do an interview with people that we've met in person, spent time with, had so much fun together. And like you mentioned, I feel like when you find other providers or practitioners or clinicians of any type online who are doing things similarly, who are approaching the body differently, not how you would normally see in this sterile clinical environment. Jen, like you said, making it fun, making it more focused on what people actually need. It's just a breath of fresh air. And that's, I think, why we've enjoyed connecting with you two a ton. I mean, you're both chiropractors and we're both physical therapists. And there's always this like unspoken/spoken turf battle between, you know, practitioners of different types, especially chiros and PTs. But, you know, we found we work so well together because we approach body similarly. And I think that's where I want to start, is like, what drew you both into going into chiropractic care, and what made you kind of take a slightly different path than what people might see as traditional for chiros?
Well, so for me, I always knew movement was going to come first. So I played softball in college, and I originally was going to go the path of physical therapist. And at the time, chiropractors had a bigger scope of practice. And so I was like, I actually can do more as a chiropractor with a movement focus or a sports focus than I could as a PT. And that kind of took me down that road of just giving me as many available options as I could. So that was kind of where I started with chiropractic, but movement was always at the heart of everything because, you know, growing up as an athlete, it's always been important.
Yeah. I mean, as you went through school, did people find that weird that you wanted to focus on movement so much? Did you ever feel any pushback?
I think within chiropractic, there's actually a very large like sports chiropractic field. Good. You know, two of the bigger subfields within chiropractic are kind of pediatrics and family, and then more like your sports fields. There's also nutrition and neuro. There's lots of different pathways that you can go in. But especially at the school that I went to, Parker in Dallas, there's just a really big focus on that sport and functional movement performance aspect. So it was really great.
Taking a quick pause from the interview to talk about an aspect of health that not many of us pay attention to, and that's our hydration. And this is unfortunate because it's so much so within our control. And I'm not talking about just drinking enough water. I'm talking about replacing the electrolytes that we're losing naturally throughout the day, especially on these hot, hot summer days. That's why Jen and I use Element electrolyte drink packages to make sure our sodium, potassium, and magnesium levels are at their optimal. And that can help with things like brain fog, fatigue, bowel movements, sleep, muscle cramps, and so much more. These are some of the most important minerals in our body, and we want to make sure we're doing everything we can to make sure they're at their optimal. And if you go down to the link in the show notes, you'll get a sample pack, and Element has actually updated their sample pack, so you get two each of their top four flavors, so you'll inevitably know which one you like best when you come back to order more. The link is drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelement, spelled out LMNT.com/optimal. Let's get back into the interview.
I think our profession, you know, as a whole, I think if you were to go into like 10 different chiropractic offices, you'd see 10 different things going on, you know, from offices just being like what we term straight chiropractic, which is just you're in there for 5 to 10 minutes, you're getting adjusted and you're on your way, versus, you know, business models that we have set up. We run at very similar practices where, you know, my new patient visit is 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's just completely different model, with it being really the foundation is movement and empowerment. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a different aspect. But as far as like the chiro PT thing, I mean, it's really interesting. I think what we've seen over the years is that, you know, the boundaries are starting to blend.
Yeah.
And I embrace that for one, because when we have the ultimate goal of helping people in the long run, like if that's our goal as practitioners, then why would we all not want to work together to ensure that that happens?
Exactly.
Being like, this is my stuff and this is what you do. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, that's always been like the biggest thing is anytime I say something, you know, people are like, you're attacking chiropractors. And I'm like, I'm not. Like, there's physical therapists who do the same thing and are saying the same thing. And it, you know, and just like you said, you can walk into different physical therapy offices and you'll see differences across different offices or within outpatient hospitals. And, you know, and so there are differences in different settings. It just depends on the clinician that you go to and what you're really seeking and the intention. And I think, like you said, and what I've heard from newer chiropractors as well, is that there is a lot of information just crossing now in terms of what we're both learning in school, because the goal is ultimately to help someone. So if a physical therapist is really great at adjustments and still adding in other techniques and movement, that's amazing. If a chiropractor is focusing more on movement than even doing manual work, amazing. Like, I don't know why it has to be one way or the other. You know, I think we're just all trying to help humans. And I love the fact that it's starting to evolve altogether, where it's not just about tables and coming in and seeing a clinician, but it's also what equipment do we have available? Like, even in PT offices, it's beyond just bands and, you know, standard body weight exercises, but we're understanding more that we need to load the body. We need to create some stimulus and some change. So it's like, it's so fun when I get to connect with chiropractors who've learned something maybe a little bit different in a different way. And I get to learn from you guys as well in terms of different information in the body and how I can help and empower my own clients. And so I really appreciate that. But I want to understand as well now, because we talk about movement, that's important, but why feet? You guys are called Gait Happens. So why the focus on feet?
It's always been kind of a passion of mine. And I say this all the time. I think when you become passionate about something, it's being driven from some type of personal quest. Mm. You're trying to figure something out. I was a dancer, a runner, a triathlete, and just always struggled with foot pain. It was kind of my deterrent of being able to continue to move. And, you know, I have always used movement as kind of a mental health check for me. So it was a very big goal of mine to kind of figure this out, to the point where I was like, okay, let me go to chiropractic school. I also kind of looked at PT school. And then when we went into chiropractic school, we had about maybe half a semester on foot and ankle. And I think it's interesting with like education too. You learn enough to not hurt somebody. You know, it's like they teach you just enough to kind of, you know, learn the ropes, but your clinical experience and the things that you learn really happen once you kind of get out there, and hopefully you can surround yourself with, you know, some really good mentors. And that's what I was able to do. My mentors from the foot and ankle, once I really got out of school, were just incredible. I worked in a couple of orthotic labs, so it was a very, very different approach. And so when I realized that that wasn't quite fitting the bill is really when I kind of dove deep into it. I mean, to me, the foot is everything. It is our only contact with the ground that keeps us upright and balanced as a human being. It's what enables us to walk and ambulate. And so when you start interfering with that immediate contact, you can be pretty certain that you're going to see some type of sequela. So it's a healthy obsession, I hope. Weird, some would say.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, And it makes so much sense when someone starts to think about, oh yeah, I'm standing on my feet. I'm up on my feet. I'm walking on my feet. And yet the number one thing that's typically neglected the most when it comes to movement health is the feet. Yep. You know, yeah. Anytime we then have a problem, we are told to get the orthotic. We are told to get the more supportive shoe and to make sure you have good arch support or to get the Hokas and have big cushions. So I kind of want to open up that conversation as well as to understanding, well, when do orthotics play a role in a part of someone's foot journey? And when does that look like? And for those who are told that you're supposed to be an orthotic forever for life, like this is now it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that interventions for foot pain, and which, by the way, most people don't think about their foot until it hurts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I can't do anything. It's one of those areas of our body that will literally stop you in your tracks. Most other things you can kind of still get around, but when your foot hurts, it's literally like your step count goes down. And so our first line of intervention has typically been, if it hurts, get an orthotic. And if it hurts worse, get surgery. From a functional perspective, those conversations have not been had. And I've been in this industry for a long time from, not a podiatry, let's just clear the air there, not a podiatry background, but working in orthotic labs with podorthists and looking at this from a functional perspective. Why are we not looking at the foot like we look at the rest of the body? I am not anti-orthotic by any means. I work with an orthotic lab. There is a time and a place for those devices. And I like to term them more load modifiers because they're modifying loads, which can be very beneficial in acute cases like an acute plantar fasciitis, or if someone has a tendinopathy, right? Modifying the loads within the foot. But if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So there has to be some type of orthoses with a strengthening program, foot strengthening program, and then hopefully some type of exit strategy. That would be the ultimate goal. And that is what the research says, that in short term, orthoses can be beneficial. There really isn't any long term benefit. And if the orthoses is coupled with strengthening, which makes sense if you think about that anywhere else in the body,
you know, I think everybody, at least in our world, this becomes a very black and white conversation, right? Where it's like, you're super pro orthotic and you're pro like arch support and never go barefoot, or you're like, everyone should be barefoot all the time. And we need to meet in the middle because there's such a wide spectrum of people and where they are and what they've tried and what they can do and what they need in that moment and what their goals are. So, you know, there are the people that orthotic therapy can be that acute tool that they use in the short term. And then, like Courtney said, build up that strength and get rid of it. There's also people that do have abnormalities in their feet, right? Or they have degenerative diseases. Like, for example, you know, going a little bit into my story, but I have three of my parents, right? Blended family, but I have three of my parents that have weird foot things. And so it's like my stepmom has Charcot-Marie tooth, which is a degenerative neurological disorder. And she is in orthotics and will be for the rest of her life, right? We are basically trying to slow down a disease and help her be able to move. And that's a tool that can help her, right? So we have to also think for the normal population or the average population, yes, it can be this short-term tool, or we may not even need that tool and we can just build up that function. But there's also a population where these tools can be used forever. And that's okay because it's actually helping them live their lives.
Huge point.
That's the distinction that we don't often get in the social media battles, right? Where people like, you have to be in one camp. Are you team orthoses or are you team barefoot? And Jen and I have had to learn better how to advocate for a more barefoot, you know, focused lifestyle, because as soon as you start saying those things, we'll get people in the comments saying, if I even thought about walking around my, you know, house barefoot, like, I'd fall to the ground or I'd have excruciating pain.
My heel would explode. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have to have conversations with that person, like, absolutely. And that's why we would never tell you to just walk around your entire day in a barefoot shoe, because that's not the point. The point is building strength, building mobility to your capacity so that maybe you can gain more function, or Perez, to your point, maybe they land in that boat where they are somebody who would benefit from lifelong use of a different tool. And so I think, you know, that's really challenging that like there's not much room for, I had a friend say it's like a lot of Instagram arguments are like ships passing because you have someone bring up a barefoot point and then somebody who like brings up this extreme example to combat them. And I'm like, you're not even arguing the same thing. Like if you actually had a conversation, you'd probably actually agree on most of what either person is saying.
Right. Exactly.
Which to be fair, I mean, try to get that whole conversation into a 1 minute reel, right?
Yeah. I know. Exactly. It just doesn't happen. I think that's the issue with a lot of feet stuff, but you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. You know, Courtney, going back to your point about load management, like that is a tool for load management. And so understanding how to properly start to load the foot functionally and build up strength over time is huge for majority of foot pain and foot issues that people are going to experience. What are some of those heavy hitter tools that you think majority of people, despite whatever diagnoses they might have going on or known, or, you know, maybe they're not dealing with foot pain, but they don't want to in the future. What are some of those like heavy hitter tools? Like, I wish that people implemented this, or I wish that you did this on a daily basis. Like, what would some of those things be?
There's kind of some low hanging fruits. I've thought about this so much because it is kind of a newer conversation, if you will, to get people to start thinking about their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And people are get very sensitive about it, especially now with access to social media. They'll be like, exactly what you said. I can never do this and I can never do that. So the conversation really has to be, we want to meet them where they are.
Right.
So you think about kind of low hanging fruits. Number one to me is just get a shoe that fits the shape of your foot. Like lowest hanging fruit. The toes should be the widest part of the foot, period. Like that's a fact. If you look at the majority of footwear, and if you look at most of our feet, that is not the case. Now, some would say that the shoes don't matter. Well, if the shoes don't matter, then at least work on things like toe splay and toe strength, because weakness in those areas are predictors of falls. They correlate. When your feet are weak, fall risk can go up. So those are the conversations I have with my patients. Wide toe box shoes, allowing your foot to get on the ground. Basic stuff, even like rolling the bottom of the foot, you know, doing exercises to bring awareness to your foot, which most people, this is a very entry level thing to do. And then that has to obviously progress because the foot takes on a ton of load when we walk and when we run, and we have to treat it as such and train it as such.
Exactly.
One thing I would add to that too is even just starting by going barefoot some of the time, right? Take away the shoe entirely, especially for, you know, there's many populations that go barefoot inside the house, but there's many people who have house shoes, right? Where they're always in shoes from the time they wake up to the time they go to sleep, they have shoes on and they never get that interaction with the ground. We want to stimulate the nerves in the feet, want to make the feet move through different ranges of motion and actually use the muscles, because the more your shoe is doing for you, the less your foot is doing, right? It's just this very simple equation. So if you take away the shoe entirely and go barefoot, your foot has to do the work, which is also why it can be really difficult for a lot of people in the beginning. So if you are new to going barefoot, start with 5 minutes. Yep. You go barefoot for 5 minutes twice a day. That's 10 more minutes than your feet have gotten movement in probably years. But if you're already going barefoot in the house the majority of the day, right, start to go maybe a little bit further or try to explore your backyard or whatever that looks like. But actually use your feet is another very low-hanging fruit, I think.
I think the conversation too spans population, right? Because I think sometimes we view our geriatric population with, you know, we need to go easier and we need to go gentler. I think that we need to have these conversations of building resilient bodies, especially as we age. And that conversation of my foot really hurts, let me go ahead and we better just put a bunch of stuff underneath their foot for protection really needs to be, I want to like shout it from the mountaintops. The foot is a feeler. It's a proprioceptive feeler, and it helps things like balance and stability. So when you start putting a bunch of stuff underneath what we're supposed to be feeling, it does compromise how we feel, and that can alter things like balance and stability. So especially the conversation as we age, I think it becomes even more mandatory that we have these conversations of slow implementation, foot on the ground. Just let your foot feel a little bit. And I think that will go a long way.
I mean, mm-hmm. You hit right there on something that I've been thinking of since you talked about widest at the toes, foot widest at the toes, and even like just simple stuff like rolling out the bottom of your foot. I mean, I know you both are familiar with Dr. Emily Splickel, and she is like all in on sensory, you know, impact of our foot health and the amount that we can feel and how that helps with balance and ambulation and all of our different movement patterns is so important. And because it kind of got brought up, I'm going to go into a little rant that I touched on before we started recording so I can get this on the record. If there's any health professional, movement professional out there that wants to argue with me about the environment you put your feet in or the shoes that you put your feet in not being impactful on your foot strength or your foot structure or how your foot develops, I think it's just foolish. I think it's a foolish take. I think it completely forgets any baseline physiology and how our body develops, that if you're putting your foot in a certain environment for 20 years, that is going to have zero impact on how your foot develops. It's silly. It is just silly. And I will go to the grave with that. And something that I say is like, have you ever seen LeBron's foot?
Me too, Mom.
Yeah.
I'll stand like next to you there.
Somebody Google, if you're listening, Google pictures of LeBron James's feet. They're disgusting. And if you don't think his feet look that way because he's been cramming his feet into tiny basketball shoes, not tiny, his feet are big, but like shoes that are too small for his feet for the last 30, 40 years, like he's 40 years old and he's been playing basketball his whole life. If you don't think that has anything to do with how his feet look, again, come, I got some snake oil to sell you, or like come chat with me, because I just think that's a silly take. Like our environment that we put our feet in is so important in how they develop. And back to the point, like, of just taking a few minutes every day. Like, I know you guys are huge on toe spacers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also a believer, because I crammed my feet into tiny little shoes for a large chunk of my life, and my toes didn't do a lot 5 years ago. They still don't do a ton, but they do a lot more since I started taking 5 minutes to put socks between my toes or to put toe spacers on while I was watching TV, while I was working on a computer. Like, these are things that you can do without a ton of time added that can end up having pretty big benefit.
You know, I think the conversation is so interesting, because if you were to, you know, live in the camp that footwear doesn't matter, but if you were to Google, if I have bunions, what should I be wearing on my feet? If I have a neuroma, what should I be wearing on my feet? All in doctors will tell you, it says, go get a wider shoe. Go get a wider toe box shoe. So why are we having that conversation as a reaction? Why can't we have that conversation as a prevention or proactive approach? If you're going to tell me I need a wide toe box shoe after I have this diagnosis, why then are we not having the conversation before? That's why I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, totally. I think also, like, when you look at it just structurally, right? So we've got our foot model here, of course, because we always
Eddie
have him handy, right?
The drummer told you I retired today. I was like, what is happening? I almost melted down this morning. Anyway,
her foot model is named Eddie after Eddie Vedder. So this is Eddie number 17, I think, how many big toes she's pulled off these things. But going back to the structure of the foot, What the research will tell you is actually really fascinating, that 40% of the stability of moving forward from our foot comes from the transverse arch of our foot. So this dome shape paired with the spreading of the deep transverse inner metatarsal ligament. So if you imagine those yellow things in there being a ligament that goes across the ball of the foot, when that spreads out and you get this dome with tension, that alone provides 40% of the stability of our foot to move forward. Now think about that ligament like a rubber band, right? In order for a rubber band to be stable, quote unquote, it needs to be stretched. But if instead I just have slack in that rubber band, now I'm trying to push off with my body weight through my forefoot and I have no stability in that forefoot. And it just becomes a very common sense conversation of, would you rather push off on something that is like this or like that?
Exactly. And I love like that visual and making it make sense for people. I felt
like a patient in your clinic.
It's like I've said that before, a time or two before. Yeah.
But it's perfect because people need that. It's like a reality check, right? Instead of like, what has to be like this, show me the research or show me this. It's just like, what makes sense? Make it make sense to me so that I understand why it's important to start to implement it. And I think that alone just made sense so that, I mean, and can help so many issues across the board, you know, rather than thinking of, well, what do I do for this diagnosis and this diagnosis? Well, let's just start at the baseline. Let's just start at opening the toes. Let's just start at moving the foot better. Let's start at having a wider toe box shoe, whether it is barefoot or there are shoes that have a little bit more cushion and support that are still wide at that toe box. And I know you guys have like a list of shoes as well that people can look at, and we'll have that linked up as well. Because there's not just, it depends, right? It depends on what's needed for your body in certain, in different instances and different pain journeys and different diagnoses. But just starting in the basics can be so impactful. And I hope that people are getting that passion from you guys too, to understand that. And I want to also ask, because if people were to look at your page, it's not just foot exercises, but there are other things up the chain that affect the feet. Like, why is it important that we look at other areas rather than just the feet when it comes to foot health?
Or why do the feet affect other areas?
Yeah.
I mean, the approach we've always taken, and Courtney actually used to have a course that she taught with her fiance Joe called this, but it's
here's
always
a physical therapist.
Here's a physical therapist. we always take a top-down, bottom-up approach, right? You have to go both directions because, like Courtney said earlier, the foot is the first thing that hits the ground when you're walking. So you have to look at the impact and how that's going to set us up for success up the chain, but also our core stability, our spinal motion, our pelvis, our hips, it all plays a role in how the foot hits the ground and how we control that motion, especially when it comes to walking. Walking is all about controlling rotation and then getting that free energy to keep going forward. It should be a very efficient movement. And in order for that to work well, the whole system has to work together. We have to be able to stack our rib cage over our pelvis. We have to be able to control rotation effectively from our hips so that our knees aren't diving in or we're not coming in too fast over our ankle. You know, there's just a lot of how it all plays together.
I mean, I think a very easy example is if you were to throw like a pebble in your shoe and go try to walk around, what would happen? You'd probably like lift your foot up, or you wouldn't roll through your foot because it would hurt. So there'd be some type of compensation that would have to occur above the foot in order to try to avoid your pain at your foot. So that's what starts to happen, is that if there is a lack of range of motion somewhere, say in your big toe or your ankle, you will start to see these compensations that are occurring above the foot. And so when we're assessing people, you have to consider that, whether it's a, you know, low back diagnosis or a hip diagnosis, the foot needs to be considered. I mean, one of the, you know, compensations for an ankle that doesn't want to dorsiflex or move is to either, you know, you can hyperextend the knee, you can tilt forward, and those will present with knee pain and back pain, and it could be being caused by an ankle that doesn't want to move well. So I think we have to look at this kind of whole body approach. You know, I always say we have to treat the person, not the diagnosis.
Mm. Yeah. I am somebody who doesn't dorsiflex well, and I have also had insane extension in my low back as a result because my body's compensating to be able to stay on axis. And that's a point. And that's one of our huge complaints about the clinic. Someone comes in with back pain and you're in your notes showing that you're doing foot ankle exercises with them. And then insurance companies are like, they've got back pain. Why are you working on their ankles? And insurance companies won't even pay for that. Whole nother soapbox that we don't,
we don't have time
to get into now, but it's just like,
it's frustrating.
How segmented our medical system is doesn't take into account that foot bone is connected to the knee bone, which is connected to the hip bone. And like, again, basic anatomy and physiology that has been coded out of our current system, which is a real challenge.
To kind of piggyback off that too, like you and I both are limited in our ankles, and you and I both would present, even though we have the same pattern that may be the initiating factor. You may present with back pain. I may present with knee pain because I hyperextend my knees when I walk. So yep. I'm a good example of what's called a varus thrust. So instead of bending in my ankle, I hyperextend my knee so that my ankle doesn't have to go forward. Well, now I get posterior knee pain. You get back pain, but really it's the ankle that's the culprit, right? Yep. And so that's where we have to stop looking at the diagnosis and start looking at the pattern and what's the missing link that we can improve.
I love watching people walk. It's like, yeah. And I love watching people walk in shoes that don't fit them, right? Because it's just like, you know, it's just fascinating to me how we really are good compensators as a species. Like, we really know how to get from point A to point B very well. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, how deep do I want to go with this person, right? Like, are they just, you know, using these compensations to get from point A to point B, you know? And how long, how deep do we go in and try to, you know, make things more efficient? And I think that's important. Like, we are all not designed to walk the same. There's so many factors. There's environment and there's, you know, just so many factors. But I think what we are designed to do is walk for long distances and efficiently. So I think that should be our goal when we're trying to look at, you know, gait and the foot and ankle is how do we get this person to become efficient and be able to walk well into their later years, because that is what it's about, is being able to live well as long as I want to.
Exactly. I mean, that is the whole point of every system of our body. If we stop moving in general because of these different aches and pains or whatever slowing us down, every system in our body is going to be impacted in the long run. And so I think what a lot of people do want to know is, okay, what do I do then to help maintain my longevity, right? What is the thing that's going to help to so that I can move better for longer?
I mean, I think I'm going to be 50 soon. Mm-hmm. And I'm right in that kind of perimenopause stage, which is new for me. And what I have realized, my entire kind of movement life has been very cardiovascular heavy. I was a runner. I was a triathlete. I was swim, bike, run up until I hit about 40. And then I'm like, things are starting to feel a little like achy. I didn't love it. And that's actually when I met Joe, my fiance. He's like, do you strength train? And I was like, no. Why do that? I need to like go run this marathon, you know?
Yeah.
And it's literally when I started switching gears and I knew that I needed that power. You lose power as you age. You lose strength as you age at a very fast rate. And, you know, I'm grateful enough that I recognized that at that time. Do I wish I would have been doing it well before? 100%.
But it's never too late to get started. And that's right.
And I have felt better going into like about to turn 50 than I did turning 40. Mm-hmm. And that was like, it feels so much better because I don't, you know, it was little things like low back pain and chronic neck pain. And I'm like sitting on my bike and that's all I would do. I mean, those types of things are great from a cardiorespiratory, you know, approach, but there has to be this, you know, these different buckets that you have to fill as you age.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's hard for people to, you know, we're told so many things and so many things can be sensationalized on social media of like, oh, now it's the weighted vest walking. I have to do weighted vest walking or I have to do this. And it's like, we're getting so caught up in the little tiny things rather than looking at the bigger picture of the heavy hitter things that we really need to pay attention to. Yeah. Because like you said, like you're doing one area of cardio, but you're neglecting all these other things. So it's like coming back to what is the bigger picture overall? So what is the bigger picture for like movement longevity? What are those buckets that people should be focusing on?
I mean, I see it with our patients every day. They'll have a, you know, you do what you're good at.
Yes, right? Exactly. Well, like,
if they're a runner, they really like to run, you know? So we've had to have these conversations where you need to be mobile. You need to be strong. You need to be able to balance. I mean, people forget walking is single limb support for 40% of the gait cycle. So it is a balance exercise, simply walking gait. And you need to have power. Those things are, I think, extremely important. If you think about, like, if I was going to walk down a stair, for example, right? Because that is a common complaint we'll get. I have pain when I walk downstairs. And then I heard this, which is crazy to me. They're like, she told me, one of my patients, she's like, my doctor told me to sell my house and get a ranch to avoid using the stairs. Not the conversations we want to have. We want to say, how do we get you to walk down the stairs? I need ankle mobility, right? I need eccentric quad strength. I need balance so that I don't fall. And I need power to be able to get back up and down. So just taking, I think, that approach of these different kind of buckets, pillars that we need to fill, and making a well-rounded, resilient body as we age is important. It can't just be this kind of tunnel vision of, you know, I'm only going to ride my bike. I am only going to run. It's not going to cut it. And we see it in our clinics every day.
Yeah. I think as a recovering athlete, you know, playing football, basketball, baseball, I was a sprint athlete. Like, I never was doing active. I mean, basketball is a little more, you know, cardio based, but short sprints, 5 to 6 second sprints were my jam. And a lot of that included strength training and Olympic weightlifting as, you know, our programs in the off season or between. And man, by the time I got to the end of college, I was just burnt out on being in that bucket. And I've spent the last 10 years since then just exploring everything. And I feel like when people just give themselves that liberty to explore a lot of different styles of movement, it will start to become inevitably clear where your gaps are and where your restrictions are. And I found that I have some, you know, major mobility restrictions that I'm still continuing to work on and need to be more aware of. I mean, that's my main thing. That's where I need to start with my foundation. And then we've talked about my foot shortcomings, but yeah, I'd be interested. And I feel like you said, this changes at every aspect of life. And I think about the buckets that you just gave and patients that I saw when I was more specifically, you know, doing rotations or doing some of my early work in skilled nursing facilities or nursing homes, the things that people lose, that balance, they can't spend any amount of time on a single leg. So walking becomes difficult without any sort of assistive device. Getting up from a chair or a toilet, that requires a decent amount of power to get up from a low surface. So it's those things that if we don't start addressing early on in earlier stages of life, when we get to those later stages, it's going to become inevitably clear that we can't walk up the stairs in our home and we're going to have doctors telling us to get a single level house.
And it's unfortunate when that is the advice. And I hear that a lot. It's like, oh, well, if your knee hurts, you know, you have actually arthritis, don't do squats anymore. You have this, like, don't do this. Like the recommendation is usually to neglect and stop doing what we need to in order to continue to live long and feel well within our body. So it's super unfortunate. And that's why, you know, Courtney and I, well, we all came together and Courtney and I filmed a movement prescription program, a course for you guys that includes all four of these buckets so that your guided one from two clinicians in different areas that, you know, we've brought our brain together to decide what exercises are best, what are the heavy hitters, and really understanding what could I be neglecting and what do I need to be adding in, you know, in these four different pillars. And it is so fun what we created. I'm very, very excited and passionate about it.
It's one of the most, like, I think, and we've done a lot of like online courses. This is one of the most exciting courses that I'm telling all of my patients about it.
And my family and my friends. Yeah, totally. Same. And I think the cool thing about the four pillars too, right? So we have stability, mobility, balance, and power. Like you guys have been saying, is everyone can benefit from something different, but also you can, because you have access to it, you can revisit it, right? Like for me right now, working on stability, you know, like I'm still building stability and strength postpartum, but then later on, maybe it's, I focus more on power or obviously doing all of them, but you'll find that your needs shift. engaged. And I think that that's so cool that it's such a well-rounded program. And that's why I've been so excited about it.
Yeah.
Well, and we made it so that we're trying to make it as accessible as possible. Like, we know that there's so many things out there, and like doing the next thing, it's like, it's a lot to add in. So each day is 15 minutes. It's 4 days out of the week that you would commit to. Plus, we're doing weekly lives through August with Courtney and I, so that not only are you learning a little bit more along the way, but you also get the opportunity to ask questions and have our feedback along the way. So I think that's an incredible tool. And each week we focus on the foot and ankle complex, and then the core and how that, you know, what is really happening there, the hips. And then we kind of have like a challenge day where we pull it all together and like make it a little bit more challenging. And like, can you do this? And again, it's 15 minutes that we're asking of you. And if you wanted to make it more, if you wanted it to be your workout, you know, we have that option available where you could do a little bit more rounds.
Yeah.
But like this, we try to make it as accessible as possible. And every day is something new. So lifetime access, you have the ability to continue, like Jen said, to go back, watch it, relearn, yep, and continue to improve within your body.
And if you don't think, if you're listening, and so like, for example, during the balance module, there's a hip section. And if you don't think that a hip-based balance 15-minute session will get you sweating, ask Dr. Conley here how that went. And we had to do that day twice because I messed up the recording. Yeah. So she had to do it over again.
Tried. I was like, I actually don't. That's what's so cool, right? Because I'm flying to Pittsburgh tomorrow to see my family. And I want to take that module, right, with my mother, who's 75. I know that we have modifications in there where she can be able to do it. And then I also know that I've done it, and I basically was out for like the next day because I had to do it twice. So it's cool to be able to, you know, take the same 15 minutes and be able to say, I can modify this if I need to, and I can really hand it to myself if I need to. And I definitely got it handed to me twice.
I mean, the exercises are, I think they're so cool because it's stuff that's going to step you outside of the box of what you've probably been traditionally doing.
Yeah.
Give your body an opportunity to learn something different, and you're being cued by either Courtney or I the entire time. So that again, with the modifications, progressions, ways that you can get to know your body on a deeper level in all these different aspects.
One of the modules, the power module, I think a lot of people, as we age, kind of shy away from that. It's almost like a scary word, you know, like jumping.
Yes.
Hopping, or like, you know, those things start to sound scary. And I think the way that we've introduced that in like such a safe way and all these modifications that we've done really makes it welcoming, because it is something, you know, that needs to be certainly thought about it and, you know, modified to what you can do.
And the goal of this program, and we kind of talked about this, like it's a 4-week program. You're not going to come out the end of these 4 weeks like suddenly being an Olympic athlete, you know, like it progression takes time. And that's why, it could. But I appreciate that this program is something that can be modified for your 75-year-old mother up to an elite athlete. I know I have friends that are still in elite athletics that if I ran them through some of these modules, they would really struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of this program is to help you understand where those gaps are and to help you give you the tools so that you can start to work on these areas that you might have some deficits or have restrictions to prepare for any stage of life.
Yeah.
And also, we're really fun. So, you know, you want to hang out with us, laugh with us, get to know
us. We'll also get some laughs in there for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that we need to put together a bonus video for people with just outtakes of the recording. Yeah.
Yes. I assume I'll be on some of those.
Possibly.
But we do have, so we have already done our early bird discount, but for podcast listeners here, we have a special discount that's going to get you into that early bird pricing still, even though we're out of that official pricing era. So just use code OPTIMAL. We're going to have it linked up and
get
come
in.
Join us.
Come join. Come to the lives. Jen and Courtney are fun.
I promise.
It'll be a good time, but I'm so excited for people to get this in their hands.
Yes.
Perez, Courtney, I mean, I'm just glad that we've gotten to meet and hang out.
Same.
Same.
Collaborate on this program together. The work that you guys do is incredible, and I know that you're going to continue to help tons of people, and I know this program is going to do the same. So appreciate y'all.
Same. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening in on our interview with Dr. Perez and Dr. Conley. They are two of our absolute favorite people, and we are so excited to be collaborating with them on this movement prescription program for longevity, focusing on the four pillars that are key for moving well at every stage of life. Remember, you can join us now. We're about to start that with a huge group. You'll get access to the four live webinar sessions with Dr. Jen and Dr. Conley, where you can ask questions as we move through the program. Remember to use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get the early bird discount that is no longer available, only available for you as a podcast listener. And of course, please pass this episode along if you know of anybody who might be able to benefit. We will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.